Hello, and welcome to the Canadian Orange Podcast. The Orange mission is to unite Canadians around the core problem that we face as a country, which is broken money. And this podcast is a place for Canadians to have conversations about how fixing the money fixes Canada. My name's Nick, and I'm talking to Lucas in this episode. And if this conversation resonates with you or offered you value, please consider sharing it with others or donating to the Canadian Orange Party to support the show. You can go to CanadianOrangeParty.com to donate. Current block height is 926,303. Hash rate is at 971 exahashes per second. And one Canadian dollar currently buys you 771 Satoshis. And one Satoshi is a small fraction of a Bitcoin. There's 100 million Satoshis, or sats for short, in one Bitcoin. And today we're talking about how sound money changes sound governance, or changes governance. A little slip there. I believe it does make for sound governance, but how sound money changes governance. But just quickly before we dive in, we have an update about the first truth campaign that the Orange Party is going to run. The mission of this campaign is to expose the fraud of currency inflation. And so we need everyone's help to A-B test our first printed pamphlet and offer some honest feedback on version one of our e-pamphlet, which will be hosted online. So please, if you have a sec and it's safe to do so, pause this right now. Go to endinflationcanada.com. Check it out. Just takes a little bit of time and it gives us a huge benefit, and just submit some feedback. Any and all feedback is good, and vote on pamphlet A or B. It's like 80% complete. So depending on when you hear this, if it's before mid-December, it might be imperfect, but we're tweaking it, and by mid-December we'll be ready to rip. All right, let's dive in. So maybe to start is like fiat politics are getting a bit ridiculous. I think they're quite ridiculous, actually. Almost absurd, you could say. And
can you provide an example? Or
oh boy, how long we got. just the superficiality of the conversations happening in this fancy stone place called the House of Commons. The farce that they even have to call themselves honorable before each statement is probably a good indicator of the gaslighting that we're being put under. And just if you literally listen to a couple interactions and you hear the question being asked and the answer being given, the non-answer being given, it just seems like just a low intelligence level of discussion and really pointless and meaningless. At least that's how it seems to me. Maybe you have a different opinion. Maybe you just haven't gotten there yet. If you're listening to this, I don't know, but it's hard to take that seriously. And I think because of that, a lot of people, reasonable people, especially Bitcoiners, have either lost faith in the system or just ignored it, or feel homeless politically because no group out there is representing their interests. Obviously, the Orange Party is looking to change that. But what are your thoughts about that at a high level, Lucas? Do you agree? First of all, do you agree with that? Can you give me an example? And yeah, just general thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've seen, just by more or less by accident, maybe scrolling through social media or even on TV at one point in my life, where these people are arguing like children on television in public. It's embarrassing. I don't know if there's much more I can add to that. It does not seem like the realm of serious they're not serious people. I don't know how else to say it. Like, this is not a way of adjudicating super important matters that relate to, you know, 40 million people or whatever. It's pretty bizarre. It makes you pretty cynical for the whole project of improving it, to be honest. Like, it's an uphill battle. I guess maybe our work is cut out for us, but it's
We're starting real far underwater. But still, you can either drown or try and fix it, even though you're real far under.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, why not?
Yeah, and it's like, within that analogy of being far underwater, it's kind of like the big thing that gives me hope is we have this jetpack that can blast us out of water immediately, and it's called Bitcoin. Like, we don't have to like swim up at snail's pace. It's like we have a tool that if adopted, if enough people realize they're being stolen from and choose to end the fraud of inflationary currency, we can literally get out of the water and blast up super high very quickly. You know, just to keep
Yeah,
in line with that metaphor.
it's really interesting. I like the podcast because it makes me think about the political level and the personal level, and there's always this kind of different people have different views on these things where they just say, you know what, I'm going to adopt a Bitcoin standard in my life or a sound money standard in my life, and the political isn't super important to me. I'm going to go where my time is most valued and where I'm treated the best. And then there's also the aggregate effect of that. If enough people realize this and do it, I think that it does draw a lot of the energy and the power from the political realm. And I think we saw in the States where Bitcoin had some influence in politics as people became more wealthy and had more influence as Bitcoiners. Yeah, there's this kind of back and forth between the individual and the political level where on an individual level, in a very short time after getting into Bitcoin and kind of understanding it really sucked me out of the left-rightedness, the left and right competition in politics, and you realize that it's all bullshit, essentially. It's all just one. I guess I could summarize it to say that one side is going to print money in a certain way that benefits certain people, or in a very short time horizon, it will benefit them immediately and just be detrimental over time. And the other side is doing the exact same thing. And it is just your choice, your pet problem that you like or don't like that influences how you're voting. And I think that on an individual level, if you adopt this, it was as if by magic, I just stopped caring about what these people were talking about to the extent that I knew that it was caused by garbage money and printing money. And I think on a kind of more macro level, where more and more people realize this, I hope that they'll start pushing back and calling, I guess it just, if enough people are like that, then all of a sudden, the sidedness, the divisiveness of your side versus mine loses its power. It's certainly lost its power for me, and I can only speculate as to what it's going to do if enough people adopt it. But it's pretty interesting how it re changes your relationship with politics, and you stop thinking that half of the population are stupid or evil. And realize that they're just stuck because they don't understand the alternative. There's a third option, which is sound money for sure.
Yeah, that was really well said. And I think the red and blue choice is the illusion of choice because they're both the same team. I love how you said that. One side is going to print money first to the benefit of certain people. The other side is going to print money for the benefit of a different subset of people, and you get to vote on who benefits from that money being printed, not knowing that by printing money, we all get screwed.
Because
And yeah.
the trade-offs on a short timeline are unpalatable to people.
Yep.
Like no one is willing to say like money is like the wealth produced by a society is a finite thing that you cannot just print into existence forever. It's like
Yeah,
that's yeah.
to think it even would work or that it could go on perpetually is the most maniacal, stupid thing ever.
I think it's actually the embarrassment of our time.
Yeah, I think that's
So,
part of it for me too, is it sucks to have this sense of pride of being from a beautiful country with mostly awesome people and then being ashamed to say you're from that country because of the farce that our political system has become. it really sucks. And
Yeah.
part of this podcast is to say we want to reclaim the right to proudly say we're from an amazing country. And I think there is two teams. There's like Canadians versus fiat money controllers. Those are the two teams. And we can just kick the evil team out by refusing to acknowledge the legitimacy of their system. That's what adopting sound money is personally. It's the refusal to acknowledge the legitimacy of these time thieves that are operating a fraudulent currency system that has just been accepted and normalized because that's what, if you control the money printer, you control the narrative. And maybe a good place to start is I want to just give this context with a framework that I find really helpful to think of. I call it the hierarchy of influence. But it's just an idea that there's all these elements, interdependent elements in a society. And I think it's helpful to find a hierarchical ranking whereby you sort them from top to bottom, and the top things are most influential. Because I really think this has helped me make sense of a lot of things. And it's also given me the deep conviction that fixing the money fixes everything else to a large extent. So I would just want to share this. I would love to hear feedback from people if they have a stack that is organized differently, or Lucas, if you think of things differently within this sort of framework, I'd love to hear it. So my version of the stack is, again, from top to bottom, the top, the things at the top are higher in influence and they influence everything below. So money, policy slash governance, which is what we're talking about today, media, energy, education, health, and then environment. And by environment, I'm not talking about climate change. I'm talking about the actual health of the environment that surrounds us in our day-to-day life. The quality of the air we breathe, the quality of the water we drink, the quality of the food we eat, all that kind of
The
stuff. And
human environment. Yeah.
the human environment, but also the natural environment that we live within, right? And the logic there is it goes under health because people that take care of themselves understand that the health of the environment they live within is a direct impact on their health. So they take care of where they live, basically. They don't dirty the environment around them because they know it's going to make them unhealthy. And so according to the stack, money is superordinate to everything else. Everything is downstream of money. And based on this, the character of the money, the quality and the character of the money influence and determine the character and quality of everything below. And I'm saying this slow because I think this is like the fundamental. If you don't agree with this, I want to hear an alternative perspective. If you do agree with this, then we can move on to basically imagining how the character and quality of the money going from based on deception and fraud to truth and integrity can change all the other layers below: governance, media, energy, education, health, and environment. And so today we're talking about governance, just to give context to what we're talking about today. This is just part of a big pie of interrelated elements. And just the one thing I wanted to say about what you said before, is like the current realm of fiat politics is a place where unserious people have unserious conversations. And it's almost like our hope with the Orange Podcast is to be a forum for serious people to have serious conversations. And that should be the secondary tagline. Fix the money, fix Canada. Orange Podcast is a place for serious people to have serious conversations about things that actually matter and in a thoughtful way, not this like super fiat politics joke kind of way. So, do you agree with that stack? What are your thoughts on that? And then maybe we can move on to like
Yeah.
specific elements of how sound money changes governance.
In line with what I was saying earlier about the individual, the kind of changes on an individual level and the how it relates to changes on a political level. Have you ever read The Sovereign Individual?
I have. I don't know if I finished it, and it was a while ago.
Yeah, I'm burning through it right now, and so I kind of have a bit of a Dunning-Kruger thing going on, but it's pretty interesting, this idea of kind of big P politics playing such a central role in all of our lives, because that's kind of where the distribution of energy and power, it's kind of like the power center of gravity in our society, where most of the change on a day-to-day level kind of occurs where I think before it was in like religious leaders had a lot of power at one point. It discusses these kind of these changes over time and the amount of sacrifice that people would offer it for the sake of these like main kind of structures in their lives, like influencing their lives. It talks about how chivalry was just this crazy, like people just did absolutely asinine things for the sake of chivalry, and it was this kind of this honor culture would have people doing things that were just we would consider today absolutely insane. And I think in the political realm there's some similar I'm sympathetic to this idea that on an individual level, someone can just take their energy to where it's treated best, and just move. If they disagree with the politics and if they're not treated properly, they can move. And I think that you and I come at this from the opinion that we have a lot of family and friends that live in Canada that we love and don't want to suffer in the way that we would be avoiding were we to kind of move out of the country. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that like the political can have a huge impact. However, we can make a lot of these sacrifices in the name of politics that I think are they're not in the interests of yourself were you to do them, and they're not in the interest of the society at large generally. There's kind of a tension there, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, that we should try and work to make things better for people, but to kind of lay ourselves down on this wheel of politics for politics' sake isn't required. So I'm still kind of, as you can tell, I'm kind of like still working through this in my head. I think generally speaking, what's good for an individual is good for the society. That's kind of my general thing. And if that means for that individual, for that family, that they should, am I making any sense, man? I just there's
Yeah.
it's tricky. It's really tricky.
It's a deep question,
It's yeah,
and I was
it's tough.
following.
Like,
You should get, if you can pick that up, you should keep going because I was following.
yeah, it's I think that all that to say is that politics would be lower in the stack for me because people have the ability to influence it by just moving their time elsewhere, moving their energy elsewhere, moving their family elsewhere. And that there is something to be won by fighting for sound money in politics in Canada. And that thing to be won is reclaiming a beautiful country that has the possibility to prosper and have a bunch of people be prosperous. That being said, the other side of that is that if you disagree strongly with it, it's like just take your time elsewhere. And that's maybe ironic for a to say as a podcast talking about politics in Canada. It's just like yeah, just leave. But like, I'm not advocating for that, but I think that there's like a
Well, we're here because we decided not to leave. Like you said, it's like
yeah, exactly.
ceding to these parasites, basically saying, okay, you can take the country, and the people who don't see what's happening are going to suffer into slavery forever. That's like Bitcoiners, people who own sound money are powerful. They're very powerful because, as much as you might not like it, the amount of wealth you have gives you power in society, socioeconomic power, which is a pretty significant form of power. Fiat is literally killing itself slowly. This is the nature of fiat, right? It's literally killing itself into irrelevance on its own. No help needed. It's going there. The speed at which it goes there and the way that it goes there is dependent on a lot of things, but that's where it's going. Bitcoin is getting more valuable over time because in a world of abundant currency, the scarce thing will soak up more and more of that fiat value over time. So Bitcoiners are, I think, more intelligent. I don't know that many politicians, so I don't, maybe I'm biased there, but I know a lot of Bitcoiners and they're extremely intelligent. And if the caliber of thought of the politicians is reflected at all in what they're saying in this clown house, House of Commons right now, then Bitcoiners are way smarter than the politicians. They just are. And even just from a merit basis, it's like Bitcoiners are building great products and services that benefit people. Politicians are literally soaking value out of the system and degrading the products and services we receive as citizens. Like I think of as countries like companies, right? It's like, it's kind of like a hotel. It has a CEO, you pay to be there. They're expected to provide you products and services and maybe protection. If they are not giving you value for the money you're paying, if you're paying $500 a night and you're getting no service and there's like cockroaches everywhere and the service is terrible and people are stealing from you, you're going to leave. You're just going to go to a different hotel, right? If you view countries as service providers, you should, like you said, you can just walk away and go to another service provider that is open. They might provide friction and try and stop you from taking all your stuff, but regardless, you can do it. Easier when you have sound money, side note. But also, it's like, this country is pretty beautiful and it's worth protecting. Like, they only win if no one protects the country, right? Fiat, evil men only do can only win if the good men don't stand up and stop them from doing it. That's like this, like some quote from someone that I just butchered. But this idea that if all we have to do is fix the money and it literally changes everything, including governance, it's worth trying, right? It's worth a try. Because if all the good people just surrender and leave this country to the fiat politicians, a lot of people suffer. But I agree. If in a world of sound money, if the money is good, then governance becomes much more about self-governance than centralized governance. Like it's almost like with correct money, with honest money, it's more about responsibility, personal accountability, than it is governance, because there's not these few people governing the many. It's everyone is doing their job to take responsibility for their well-being. And then there's people who provide services for everyone to coordinate and make that efficient, like making roads or, you know, all these things that people say, who's going to do this? Like, people coordinate the big things, like, so that my garbage and your garbage gets picked up without us needing to know someone who's willing to do that for us, right? There's certain efficiencies. I'm kind of wandering a little bit, but
no, it makes sense.
I think fundamentally, if we can just agree that everything is subordinate to money, then changing the money changes everything. And I think under a fraudulent fiat regime that we have right now, we have a fraudulent, corrupt, and dishonest currency at the top that is designed to steal from us, and it's enforced with coercion. Therefore, everything subordinate to money, which is everything, becomes corrupted. And so when we adopt sound money to replace the fraudulent currency, everything fundamentally changes. Everything. In a big way. And I think that's the hope that I have, is like, if we don't try and fix any of the many problems that we have, and all we do is focus on restoring truth and integrity in the money we use, everything else will improve. And one thing that will improve is, and this is where it's kind of hard to think about, right? It's almost like, because fundamentally, I think the only vote that matters is what money you use. That's the only true vote that matters, that you have control over, that actually matters. And if you think in a Bitcoin world, then it's, you imagine governance, you don't even really think about governance, frankly, because it becomes much less important, but it's still going to be there. And I think it still has utility to some level. So I think the conversation today is about imagining what can changing to sound money do to change policy development or politics or governance, whatever you want to call it. And I think one of the things that it immediately changes is it restores a sense of financial discipline. And that's pretty big, because like, you and I lead households. We have to be financially responsible and disciplined, right? We can't just spend a bunch of money that we don't have and never pay it back. In order to save stuff for tough times, you have to be able to create more than you consume and have an excess to then put into a form of savings so that if your family runs into hard times, you have a reserve tank to hold you over. That's responsible stewardship. That is disciplined financial acumen, right? But in this weird fraudulent currency system, politicians, which are essentially the financial stewards of the country, can just spend money that they don't have in whatever quantity they want because they can just create money out of nowhere. And if you just imagine you as a father of a household could just create money out of nowhere. So much money, it doesn't actually matter how you spend it. You don't have to be responsible. You don't have to be careful and choosy about every dollar you spend because you can just create another dollar. Whereas when you do have a finite amount of resources and you can't just create money out of nowhere, and if you do it as a citizen, it's called counterfeiting, but if the government does it, they call it inflation. Then every dollar you spend has to be carefully thought out because it's a dollar you don't have to spend on something else. So you have to allocate responsibly and effectively to make sure that you're doing the right things with the money. And so I think the first thing that gets killed, deleted wholesale with a restoration of sound money is that the government can't just spend money senselessly and spend more than it has. So it creates immediate financial discipline to be more careful with where the money is spent. And I mean, if it wasn't so sad and actually painful to admit how much we're being stolen from, the way the Canadian government is spending money right now would literally be comedy. But because of what that actually means, because you and I helped pay $10 million to farmers in Nicaragua to learn about being confused about different sexes, because it requires us to be stolen from and our kids, not just us. It's like our kids and grandkids are being stolen from to teach Guatemalan farmers about different bunch of different sexes. That isn't even true. That's absurd. It's so absurd, it makes my head hurt. And I think one of the biggest things that gets deleted instantly is that kind of stupid bullshit wasteful spending gets deleted because it brings back a sense of disciplined spending because you can't spend money that you don't have. So I'm optimistic
Not,
for that.
and not to mention that that money is not going to fund that activity to begin with. It is
Right.
going into a slush fund for these people to use. Like,
And probably
it's
part of it's going back to the politicians. So that just
one,
means
yeah,
it's money laundering, largely.
100%. Like, I mean, I don't know if he was investing in Bitcoin, but I'm pretty sure. I looked it up earlier today. I'm pretty sure Trudeau 90x'd his net worth during his time in office. 90 times the amount of money. And he's like, yeah, I would like to know how that's possible. I'm very curious.
I think we deserve an explanation as Canadian
It
people.
should be the, yeah, if that doesn't make your blood boil, if that doesn't make you seethe, I don't know what could. And it's bizarre, especially given what he did to this country while he was in office. It's insane. But yeah, like, I think a good question, it's not a question that's original to me, but it's a great question, is why are we even taxed on our income if they can just print money? And if that doesn't start the ball rolling for you to look into sound money, or like, I think that that is a very powerful intuition pump for people to start questioning everything they've been told about money. You have access to a money printer. Why do you need to take it from people? I'm curious if you have any, because I have an answer for that, and I'm
So
curious
do
what
I.
your, yeah, like, what do you think about that? Why is that?
My answer is just that it's very simple. Taxation is a system of control.
But like, why? So they can, they're already taxing us a lot, but they can print money and ta tax us without even telling us, which they do. And my view and others' view is just that were they to lower our taxes and cause inflation by printing money in lieu of our taxes, people would understand money. Whereas now we're just, okay, our taxes are high, but we have our roads are getting built and all these things, but all the farmers in Guatemala that are LGBTQ whatever experts now got there because printing money allows them to do whatever they want with the value that we create as Canadians. And they don't have to ask. People don't have to be frustrated that they're losing. It's like 40 to 50% tax. It's bizarre already. But on top of that, printing money, it's infuriating. Like people have gone
It's
up in
nasty.
arms. It's people have gone up in arms for like orders of magnitude less theft.
Yeah,
It's
people are soft
yeah.
these days.
It's
People
crazy. I
are,
don't know.
yeah, I mean, in Egypt, if you were a slave to the pharaoh, you were widely known as a slave. You were a slave because he took 20%. So we're like double slaves, and we
That's
think we're
like
free.
voting like I don't even know who you'd have to vote in to go down to. That's like the yeah,
Well, I
like
was thinking the other day, it's like, what if my garbage got picked up, if my taxes got paid, if I was just left alone and basic services were provided to me, like airports were maintained, electricity came to my home if I wanted it, maybe that's optional. I would pay a flat rate of 10% if all the homeless people who are struggling were in places where they were recovering and being fed good food and given a bed, if things were clean, if there were police officers enforcing the charter and protecting my property from being stolen, if I got hit by a car and an ambulance came and a hospital saw me and helped me not die, and if a fire truck came and put out a fire at my house before it burned my house down, I would pay a flat rate of 10% for all those services and be very happy. I would happily pay that. So the question is like, yeah, to what you said, if they didn't charge us 50% in taxes, we would have way more time to figure out what they're doing to us. So by stealing 50% of our time off the top, not to mention all the other ways, not even including inflation. Like, you pay income tax, you pay capital gains tax, you pay tax on your fuel, you pay tax on your groceries, you pay tax on your home, even if you quote unquote own your home. Like, it's actually crazy how much the government takes. Half of the days you work during the year for the money that you have is done for the government so they can pay farmers in Nicaragua and launder money and Trudeau can make off like a bandit. Like, if that doesn't make you angry, even without the fact that they can just print whatever money they want, so they don't need to do that. It's really just to make sure that people stay in survival mode and can't figure out the truth, I think. And the interesting thing is that when they switch to using a better form of money that allows their time to not be stolen from them, they have a surplus of time to figure out what's happening and to understand the truth. And that's why Bitcoiners see it for what it is and see fraudulent currency as what it is. That's literally what it is. Most people haven't asked that question. What's money? Why does our money have to steal from us? And according, I wanted to mention that stack of influence, because under money is media and education. Let's just stick with media, okay? One thing that switching to sound money does is it defunds propaganda, which is state-funded lies that stop people from understanding the truth. So let me give you an example of propaganda. CPI. Okay, this is a term that probably a lot of people have heard of. They might think it stands for Consumer Price Index, and they might think that that is a measure of how much prices are going up every year. That is the narrative that's being sold to people. And it's a straight up lie. And the only reason that the lie of CPI, from now on, even just as a quick little cheat code, instead of thinking of it as Consumer Price Index, just think of it as cherry-picked index, because that's actually what it is. CPI is a cherry-picked index, which they manipulate to make you think prices are going up 2 to 3% a year. And so most people believe inflation is 2 to 3% a year, and it's required, and it's good, and so it doesn't matter. That's what most people think. The only reason they think that is because that narrative, that fraudulent narrative, has to be propagated by the government to maintain the illusion of this fraudulent currency. So if the currency is a fraud, you have to, and built on lies, you have to constantly lie to people to maintain the illusion of the lie. And the media is one thing, like most of the media that most Canadians are watching is directly funded and orchestrated and manufactured by the government. Like if the government didn't pay my money and your money and the money they just print away from our grandkids to certain biased news entities, like all the Canadian ones, they would go bankrupt because no one actually pays for their service. No one pays to be fed these lies. The government pays for them to feed us lies, and they create policies that give these propaganda outlets lots of power and influence over Canadians. And I think one thing under a sound money standard is we can't just print money to pay propaganda entities to lie. And that gets acknowledged as so bad and so twisted that we should stop the government from spending any money to prop up propaganda organizations. And so I think that's one thing that gets deleted. We can't print money that we don't have, and we can't convince Canadians to fund propaganda. At least I don't think we'd be able to. So over time, those propaganda outlets would die off and be replaced by free market journalism companies that are telling the truth and doing good journalism. Maybe that's a naive assumption, but I think that's one thing that changes is the politicians cannot co-opt the media apparatus to keep manipulating people, which is what they use to keep themselves in power. And that's almost this idea that fraudulent currency that can be manipulated is an error code in actual democracy. That's a way bigger conversation, but rant over.
Yeah, I think one of the things to remember is that this is happening whether or not people get on board. So everything, if you ostrich and just put your head in the sand, like the influence of the media is going away, I think. Generally speaking, I think trust in all this nonsense is going away. People are understanding, people are asking more questions about inflation, and they're going to get on board with sound money on an individual level. And yeah, I view this like kind of project as trying to influence individuals to adopting sound money, and through that influencing politics, because it is happening no matter what you do. Like the spiral, like we're circling the drain, and there's an opportunity to not get flushed down with everything that's happening here. And I think a lot of people have moved to say Noster, or like even Twitter or X or whatever. It's like the media is starting to decentralize, money is starting to decentralize. I think it's just worth getting on board.
Health is decentralizing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's
Dr. Jack Cruz, legend, interviewed him a long time ago on a podcast,
Oh, sweet.
and he said something profound. He said, "Nature is a decentralized health network. When you disconnect from her, you get sick. When you plug back into her, you get healthy. That can be light, that can be food, that can be sleep. You know, see, nature has a circadian rhythm. If we divorce ourselves from the natural circadian rhythm of the world, we experience dis-ease. And it does seem like everything's decentralizing. And I think the decentralization of governance is a restoration of self-responsibility. That's almost really how I feel about this. Is like, I hadn't really thought of it until you said that governance should be lower in the stack. And then it like made me realize, yeah, that doesn't make sense. And I think in a sound money world, governance by the few to the many shrinks to a minimum. It won't die, but it shrinks to a minimum. And responsibility of the individuals expands in a counterbalance to that, right? The less governance that other people have to do to you, the more you have to self-govern yourself. And if you have sound money that can't be stolen from you, you are a sovereign. You are the definition of a sovereign. And there's not many things that can't be stolen from you. That's another thing that people just kind of don't realize yet is if you have a house, it can be stolen from you. I mean, in Canada, they're literally taking, jacking people's houses under the guise of, I don't even, some propaganda that we stole it from someone. Like it's so absurd that these things actually happen and have traction and people actually view them with legitimacy. It's so absurd. But you know, your car can be taken from you, your job, you know, they can literally put you in a cage if they don't like you, in theory, right? In practice, maybe harder than just, you know, clicking your fingers, going in a cage. But someone can't steal your Bitcoin unless you give it to, you have to give someone your Bitcoin. And that fundamental relationship with property that Bitcoin actually restored, it blessed everyone with property rights. Saylor says this, Bitcoin's property rights for 8 billion. The fact that we all have property rights without requiring permission and enforced through math and encryption means that the fundamental relationship between the individual and the state is automatically different. For anyone that adopts that money, the relationship is fundamentally different. And I think on net, if enough people adopt sound money, it changes the relationship of the people of a country with the government of a country. And when it gets to a point where people realize they are the ones that have the power, which is actually how it is now, but the illusion is that everything's fine. Once people realize that they're the powerful ones, then they can just kick the parasites out and get good people making the bigger decisions for others. And I think there are some decisions that are best made by a smaller group of people who can coordinate and have expertise to make a good decision in the best interests of all the Canadians. Right now, it's basically the most unscrupulous people who can steal in the most clever ways are the ones who seek the roles to be able to do that. So it's like dishonest money, dishonest currency incentivizes dishonest people to go into politics. Honest money incentivizes competent, honest people to go into positions of governance for short periods of time. And that's pretty interesting and hopeful to me.
Yeah, that was a very clear, a very clear explanation of what I was trying to fumble through earlier. Yeah, that's great. I like what Jack Kruse says about health. I'm sympathetic to that, where he says there's two things that are scarce: it's your time and Bitcoin. So your health is your time, and you have more time when you're healthy. And yeah, it would be pretty high on the stack for me as far as as far as health goes.
Yeah, it's almost health is what allows you. It's like the only valuable thing is your time. Health determines the quality of the time you have, and both the quality and the quantity, actually. So you have time. You can either have a short period of time because you die early, and that time can be miserable because you're sick, or you can understand how to take care of yourself, improve your health and have more time and have that time be higher quality. I think most people would choose the second one, want to choose the second one. And I think on an individual basis, it's like amazing the vitality that I see Bitcoiners get when they adopt Bitcoin. Like there's that meme of like before Bitcoin and post Bitcoin, and like people are like corpses versus like these vital, vibrant humans. It's like the meme is real. That actually happens. And you don't even have to believe us, just try it and experience it for yourself. And then when you experience it, you just want to tell everyone and you want to help more people, right? Classic, I just became a Bitcoiner. I want to tell everyone about Bitcoin all the time.
Well, imagine being, like I said earlier, being unplugged from politics in a meaningful way where you're not, obviously it concerns us what it, like the stupid decisions that they make, it concerns us. And in a way, you actually become more frustrated, or you distribute your frustration across the entire political spectrum because now you realize how stupid the conservatives are or how stupid the liberals have been all your life. And they're both acting against your interests in a way, except you can unplug because your time isn't being stolen.
Yeah.
You
You can
realize
opt out
that,
of most of the impacts.
yeah, it's just opting out. That's yeah, it's like almost like a strike. It's just yeah, it's I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if half, it doesn't even need to be half. If a huge amount of Canadians went on strike from fiat, it would probably just accelerate the irrelevant. It would just accelerate the irrelevance of fiat. Like fiat is already on a path to irrelevance, just like every other fiat that's ever existed in history. Right now, it's like it would be great to accelerate the irrelevance of fiat in order to mitigate and reduce total suffering of Canadians. It's kind of what this mission is about, right? It's like just to shine a light on all the fraud, and then people will have a desire to minimize, mitigate, and end the fraud. So, I mean, I think another big thing that switching to sound money does is it changes the time preference of how decisions are made, right? So high time preference money, like I was listening today to a podcast. There were gold guys talking about like gold just did a crazy thing this year. Most people aren't tuned into it. Like it might just be a sticker price or ticker price increase, or like, oh, gold went up to 4,000 an ounce. That's crazy. It's like, yeah, but the magnitude of that craziness on an extended timeline is like a jolt. It's shocking. So the question is like, why did that happen? And fundamentally, I think it's just happening because less people are giving their trust and credibility, to the fraudulent system. But one thing they were talking about is this idea that Canada sold its gold. We used to have gold. We used to have a savings account with a hard asset that's hard to create. And then we just sold it all. Selling your savings account is super high time preference, right? It's like, not only am I going to spend money I don't have, I'm going to take our savings, I'm going to spend it all on whatever their thing was that they were saying they had to spend it on. That is so high time preference. And because of that high time preference, Canada as a country has no assets. We are basically bankrupt. We don't have any assets. We don't have anything of value. We just go
We
into
have
debt.
people.
We have people, which
We
is maybe
have
the most
the,
valuable
we
thing.
have,
Actually, we have a lot. They're
that's,
just.
well, no, we have slaves is what I'm getting at. It's like
Oh.
who needs a
Yeah.
spendings account or who needs a savings account when you can counterfeit money and
True.
offload all the
True.
value. Like you're
It's
just
just
taking it
reckless
from
spending.
people. Yeah.
It's
Sorry, I
just.
didn't want to interrupt. It's yeah,
No,
it's
I mean, it's a good point.
wild to sell all your gold. Like
It's almost. I mean, it gets in the limit. It's super weird, right? If you can print money, if it's great to have human slaves that are paying you all the time to literally oppress them. Like, if you're an evil person, that's the apex scheme, right? But if you can just make whatever money you want and people trust in that money, why do you even need the human slaves? Like it's still a liability, right? Like what's the point? You can just create whatever you want. Why can't we just have infinite dollars and then all our problems will be solved if we can just create money, right? It's funny how most people don't even go there and ask that question. If we can just make whatever money we want, why can't they just make $1 million for each of us and we can all be millionaires? It's like, well, because then orange juice costs $500. Because this is how money works. The more you create, the more each thing you want to buy costs you because the more money's in the system. So it's like when everyone's a millionaire, it's going to suck being a millionaire. But it changes. Okay, I think what I was getting at there is selling the gold super high time preference. By switching to sound money, we switch the time preference of how governance decisions are made. So people making decisions, not only will their character be different because the character of the money will select for a different type of person, different value set, but the decisions that they're making will be done with a timeline that is stretched out way beyond, the 2 or 4 or whatever political cycle window is, which is how decisions are made right now, frankly. And they'll be looked at as, okay, we have this money that we need to spend on these things, which Canada is going to require for the next 50 years. Where do we put this money? What is the wisest place to put this money to meet all current needs and to build out infrastructure that needs to function well for the next generation? Like, there's that balancing act, and I think the time preference of the decisions fundamentally gets hacked away and lowered, just like the time preference gets lowered for the individual that adopts sound money. So, yeah, I don't know examples of what decisions get made and how they're different. All I know is, I will feel much better if I see the money that I'm giving the government for services, if they're spending them wisely on things that are going to benefit my daughter and my grandkids. Because right now, none of that's happening.
Yeah, it makes it have to be transparent. You need, in order to afford something more, you need to tax people more. And then those people will either agree with that or disagree. Yeah, it makes certain adventures in South America or across the world unpalatable because people realize that, oh, this is coming out of my paycheck. It changes the relationship that we have to the government spending our money.
Yeah, like I bet you the families right now that are having a hard time affording food, if they had to vote on their phone to say like, "Hey, do you want to send $18 to Guatemalan families to learn about LGBTQ?" I bet you most people that are struggling to even buy their own food would probably say no.
Unfortunately, it's the same. Yeah, it's the same issue where those same people are the ones being told, "Hey, do you want to get $2,000 every 2 weeks for absolutely no reason?" And they are saying yes to that, and
Of course, here I would
that's
too if I was
again,
them.
yeah, of course, it's the way the incentives are aligned, and yeah, unfortunately, that's yeah, it's one of the trade-offs. It's like, yeah, you're no longer able to just, yeah, it's obviously that is a terrible solution to the problem of not being able to afford things because things just get more expensive and it's a continuous downward spiral to insolvency, which is the longer time horizon there. Yeah.
Well, maybe we should try and end on a good note. I feel like
Sure, yeah,
it's
sounds
very
good.
easy to go down to the negative nastiness of fiat fraudulent politics, but I think there's a lot to look forward to. I mean, to bring it back to the thing that we mentioned at the start, the way, if we're talking about the Orange Mission, like what is the Canadian Orange Party trying to do? What is this Orange podcast all about? We want to be a force for financial literacy within Canada. So our theory is that if we help people understand the fraud of fiat currency, they will, number one, study money themselves and opt out of the scam by saving in sound money. The more people that opt out of the scam, the less power and influence the scam has on the rest of us. So by you opting into sound money, not only does your life get better, life gets more affordable, you have more space and time to take care of yourself, to be with your kids, to work less. Like, I think most people would want these things. And maybe the people that are hearing this podcast are already there. I don't know. If you are already there, share this with someone who's not. That's how this spreads, right? We don't want this just to be discussions within the people who have already changed. It's how do we reach more people with change? And so the first project we're doing to reach more people is a website called endinflationcanada.com. People can go there, read a little online pamphlet and learn about inflation and have a pathway to study money and some practical advice on how to start saving and sound money. They can also find a place where they can copy and paste a brief letter and send an email to their current politician if they so choose. That's like optional. right? If you have the bandwidth, if you have 10 extra minutes, find out who your politician is, copy and paste a letter, email it to them. The more of those letters they get, the more they're probably going to pay attention to the fraud of inflation if they don't already know about it. Because I think most politicians don't understand how fraudulent the currency is and how much that fraudulent currency trickles into negatively affecting everything else. I genuinely think they don't understand. There's a few that do, certainly, but most don't. And so we have to all play a role in education, both learning ourselves, taking on more responsibility to learn about money so we can make better decisions in our own lives. And when you do that, your life gets better. And then you can tell more people because you have extra bandwidth to work with. So we have an e-pamphlet that's going on that website. We're also A/B testing a physical pamphlet that we're going to print thousands of and start handing them out in our local communities, at businesses, at churches, you know, at Bitcoin meetups, if you're a Bitcoiner, in investment clubs, like anyone you can talk to, you'll literally be able to go online, order 20 pamphlets if you want. You just pay the shipping. The pamphlets will be delivered to you. They're nice printed pamphlets. You can hand them out to anyone, your friends, your family, your coworkers. And the more people we share this message with, the more people's lives we can help improve and the more we can facilitate change within Canada and the restoring of just a sound country. Like right now we are an irrational, sick, unwise country because the money we're using is fraudulent and based on stealing from us. If we help end that, our lives will be better. Collectively, our country will be better. We will potentially be taken seriously again on the world stage, which would be really nice because I think we have a lot of serious people that are not being represented by the unserious fiat politicians. And we can all play a part in changing that. Anything you want to say to close out? A little closing
rant?
Well
said. No, that's good, man. Good to go.
Thanks for listening, everyone. You can listen to this podcast on, well, actually CanadianOrangePodcast.com is officially online as a domain. You can go and listen to these episodes there. If you enjoyed an episode, please share it with others. And if it gave you value, you can donate at CanadianOrangeParty.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.